Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We've got a bad martini. We've got a crazy martini for you. And we either have a good first martini or a bad first martini. We're in a little bit of a disagreement about this one, but obviously a lot of the attention, a lot of the oxygen here in Washington taken up with what to do about this fiscal cliff. And given the results of the election, the president believes he has the hot hand here. He's demanding tax increases on the wealthier Americans. As of right now, John Boehner and Mitch McConnell are saying revenue is on the table, but not marginal tax rates increasing. But there are a couple of cracks in the Republican wall, one being Tom Cole of Oklahoma, who says he doesn't really want tax hikes on anyone, but he says, let's just do the middle class tax cuts now and worry about the rich people tax cuts later, which I'm sure the president will be more than willing to go back to. And then there are others who say, look, the president campaigned on this huge government, huge tax hike thing. The American people apparently bought it, so let them get a taste of what they voted for. Let's see if they really like what they think they like here, and let's just go off the cliff, and then we can really see what the Obama agenda's really like. Go ahead and give your take on this. What would be the benefits for conservatives if we actually ended up falling off the cliff?
At this point, if you are of the right, what is the bigger problem facing the country? Is it the likely double-dip recession we would face if going over the cliff? Or is it the mentality that all of our economic and fiscal and entitlement problems can be dealt with just by taxing the rich? And this is very pervasive. There are Republicans who staunchly oppose raising the eligibility age for Medicare. Basically, there was a depressing poll in the Washington Post recently that said the only fiscal step that anybody likes is taxing the rich. Lo and behold, it means, you know, not them. Right. And the other thing is that even, you know, indexing Social Security and various benefits to inflation, there's a slight adjustment you can make to that that will apparently save billions of dollars down the road. They even oppose that, even though it would be a exceptionally small change, not even in current benefits, but a slight reduction in the rate of increase of future benefits to Social Security and other entitlement programs. The American people are not serious about this. The American people really believe that somehow you can tax Donald Trump and make the whole problem go away. We need a teachable moment. We put a very clear choice before the American people in November. They picked the high tax guy. Okay, America, you want high taxes, you got them. But not just on the other people. Let's watch the Bush tax cuts expire for everyone and let us see the economic consequences that come from this. None of this, oh, we can, you know, solve our problems by taxing the other guys. As everybody else points out, rescinding the Bush tax cuts for those making more than $250,000 a year deals with less than 8% of our deficit for each year. So what's the point of that? Nope, I would say let the sequestration cuts go ahead. Let that devastate our defense budget. It would include $123 billion in Medicare cuts, I believe. And, you know, my attitude is, look, the House and the Senate and President Obama all signed on to sequestration, saying it was the best option unless they could come to an agreement on something better. Well, we cannot come to an agreement on something better, so now you get to see what the consequences are, America. And if you didn't like it, you shouldn't have voted for this guy for another 4 years.
Well, I absolutely love your idea of the voters getting a taste of bad medicine because they made a horrible choice in 2012. For the next 4 years, I'm basically blaming 50 to 51% of Americans who voted to reelect President Obama for anything that goes wrong with this country. They had their chance to fix this. I don't blame him anymore. I mean, he's totally destructive to this country, but it's not his fault anymore as far as I'm concerned because the people should have known better, and this is on their heads from my perspective. However, if you are a conservative or if you are even a Republican who is a member of the United States Congress, shame on you for agreeing to the debt ceiling deal last summer. But you are sent there to lead. And as we've talked about in the last couple of days, sent there to lead in a way that advances the strongest conservative principles. If, in fact, that leads to us going up the fiscal cliff because the Democrats insist on their big government crushing of a market society, then that's a consequence that may need to happen. But just getting in line and allowing it to happen because, well, let's just teach America a lesson. While there is some enjoyment for me in that, I see it as a bit of a dereliction of duty. Those people who are there from the conservative cause are there to push and fight and demand what they believe is best, not to stand by and applaud as the thing goes off the cliff, which it still might do.
The aspect of this approach that I like the least is that if you love your country, you're supposed to try to avoid terrible consequences. I guess the question is, do you feel like the long-term consequences of this denial about the need for entitlement reform and getting our fiscal house in order, is that more damaging to us than a double dip recession? Over time, I am becoming increasingly convinced of that. First of all, I mean, despite the fact there was a relatively okay GDP number today, it was driven almost entirely by government spending. And we may be headed to a double dip recession anyway. The argument is that, oh, well, you know, if there's another recession, Obama will blame Republicans. But Obama blames Republicans for everything
right. All
the time since he got into office. And, you know, what's it going to do? It's going to ruin the GOP brand? It's already ruined. Yeah. You know, what's he going to do? He's going to campaign against Republicans in 2014? That's going to happen anyway. And every House Republican who's in there was safely reelected in a year when Obama got nearly 65 million votes. So while we don't know exactly what's going to happen in 2014, the odds of Democrats taking back the House are pretty darn small. I think what's kind of fascinating about these negotiations is that Obama had more leverage before Election Day than he does now, and yet he's totally convinced he can change people's minds by doing rallies in places like Philadelphia, where, you know, in a district that happens to be represented by a Democrat. None of that is going to change any minds in the House GOP caucus. And so my attitude is, look, if Obama wants to spend these last month before the fiscal cliff doing campaign-style rallies after he's been reelected, go right ahead, Mr. President, you know, and blame, you know, Republicans after this. We'll see whether the public mood really has changed that much since, you know, by 2014. Honestly, I don't really think it can get that much worse for Republicans than it is now. And if it is, look, America needs to see the consequence of big government. And I think the simplest and easiest way to do that is, you know, let the Bush tax cuts expire, let sequestration kick in, and let America enjoy all the benefits of their decision-making this past November.
I think Obama's going to blame the Republicans no matter what happens. If we fight for what we believe in and the economy goes off the cliff and all sorts of bad things happen, we're going to get the blame. If we agree with everything the president does just to show America how horrific his agenda would be for this country, he's still going to find a way to blame someone else, and probably the Republicans, and probably still George W. Bush. And the only one who's really going to get blamed are Republicans, and rightly so, in 2014. And if that happens, hopefully it'll mean a whole lot more conservative folks coming to Congress. So I don't think that the PR game is going to win just because we give the president what he wants and America sees in crystal clear fashion just how horrific his agenda is. I thought we got a pretty good view of that in the first 4 years, and America still bought his spin in the reelection campaign. So we'll see what the strategy is going forward. On to martini number two now, and this comes courtesy of a story in the Washington Examiner and a Pew Foundation study. Well, now, of course, since the Obama administration has come around, the term socialism has been thrown around quite a bit, and it turns out that it's not quite the damaging adjective that we thought it was when we called the president socialist in his policies. According to the new study from Pew, 53% of Democrats or Democratic-leaning voters like the idea of socialism. They have a positive reaction to the word. They also have a 75% positive reaction to the federal government. Sadly, 23% of Republicans and Republican leaners also have a positive view of the word socialism. But in an interesting and seemingly incongruous way, 53% of Democrats like socialism, 55% also like capitalism, Jim. So some people love both. Not sure how that works.
They're bi-economic, you could say. It's a form of economic preference. Who are you to judge them, Greg, really? The 23% of Republicans who feel warm and fuzzy towards socialism is the part that really baffles me. I'd love to see it broken down by gender and also by region. I wonder if Californians feel particularly positive about socialism. Because, you know, kind of paraphrasing what we were saying in that earlier martini, it was an old quote from Ed Koch after he'd been defeated in a re-election. He said, are you going to run again? He said, no. The voters have spoken, and now they must be punished. If you really think that socialism is a good idea, I almost wish under a truly federalist system that states really could experiment with things. Well, then fine. You go right ahead and impose your wage and price controls and your giant, you know, let California or you know, Illinois or some state that's an absolute disaster, you know, already a disaster area, go even further to the left and see what it's like. Back when Greece economic riots were new and kind of exciting, they're not very cliche. They come out, they only happen in days ending with a Y. But, you know, but Greece was going up in flames, and somebody said, you know, Greek protesters, you guys really should go all out. And just if you really think socialism and communism are the best ideas, go for it. The world could use a giant teachable moment of watching a country destroy itself in the name of this outdated Marxist ideology to demonstrate once again that it doesn't work. It never works. Eventually you run out of somebody else's money. And so when somebody says socialism, I'd also like to see it broken down by income level. Because I don't know whether these are like limousine liberals who like it in theory but don't actually realize what it would mean to them, or whether it's folks who really are scraping by the bottom and say, hey, you know, even though it's oppressive and unfair and confiscates the hard-earned fruits of labor of other people, it'd be an upgrade for me, so I'll take it. I'd love to know exactly why people think socialism is such a good idea. Still, the idea that, you know, we live in a country in which people speak rather positively about this on both sides of the aisle, it is one of those moments where you start to wonder if you really recognize your country anymore.
Martini number three now, and back to the fiscal cliff. We'll see how long this debate plays out. If they get anything done before the actual cliff hits on the stroke of midnight on New Year's Day. But, Jim, apparently the president's already got his vacation plans in place. He's going to be in Hawaii over the holidays like he always is. Clearly, other than being in campaign mode, he doesn't seem super engaged on this issue. Big shock given the first 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth noting one, you know, that this is the range of dates for the president's holiday vacation. It's entirely possible that it may only be a portion of these dates. We don't know if, you know, if we're headed towards a fiscal cliff in the closing days of December, whether the president will be in Hawaii or whether he will come back to Washington. Having said that, considering how often, you know, Obama does his vacations and Michelle flies off to Spain and he goes off to the golf course, we should not be surprised. This is a president who believes he is totally immune to these sorts of issues, and he can point to the November election and say, there you go, you know, that people don't mind it when I do my golfing and all that stuff. People think I'm working hard, that's fine. And the traditional argument is, oh, the Oval Office always travels with the president. He can do, you know, almost anything he can do in the White House, he can do from the presidential vacation estate somewhere in Hawaii. So you know what? Let's let him do that and see how the American people feel if, and indeed, these tax hikes and spending cuts to defense and cuts to Medicare and all stuff are kicking in. And he's off catching some waves and surfing and having long romantic walks on the beach with Michelle while the country's fiscal crisis is accelerating.
Well, that would pretty much go with his pattern over the first 4 years, and he clearly feels vindicated after what happened a few weeks ago. So I guess we are not in a position to expect anything different.
In a way, if we really feel like this country is feeling too warm and fuzzy about Obama, we may want him to be indulging that ego of his. It may be in our long-term interest for Obama to be feeling his oats and to be indulging all of these impulses he has.
Good luck to Mitt Romney today as he goes to this lunch at the White House, which I'm sure won't be awkward at all, Jim. So
the menu has some sort of Indonesian barbecue, some old Barry Soetro, Lolo Soetro recipe. It's a little tough and stringy, but you know, it's interesting. Well, Obama says one of his favorite childhood recipes. So.
I hope you all got that joke. Jim, have a great day.
I'm sure they did. Our listeners did.
We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See ya.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us today. Join us again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.